You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool.
To TPC, something we have done every year for now 15 years, Confederate History Month series. Still gives me chills every time I hear Dixie being played. I don't care what version, I don't care what tempo, I don't care how you play it. It always gets to me.
The best flag and the best song.
Ain't that the truth? Boy, they did have it. We had it. Before we get into it, I just want to say we're marching forward into Confederate History Month. A little play on words, because the month of March was another stellar month of broadcasting here on TPC. We had quite a few guests join us in March. Patrick Casey, Paul Kersey. We had Ladies Night with Lacey, Courtney, Kayla, and Janice. Bill Johnson, Brad Griffin last week. Paul Fromm and Angelo John Gage. 10 guests in the month of March. And if you missed any of those programs, be sure to check them out in our broadcast archives. Okay, let's talk about it. First of all, when talking about the South, we should never forget, of course, that the South was right. There is no shame to bear for being a Southerner. In fact, you should, as I do, consider myself having won the genetic lottery for God to have been so kind as to allow me to come into this world as a Southern male and to have been born and raised in a former Confederate state. This is a birthright that I wouldn't trade for anything in the world. No amount of money. So much pride. That we should share as Southerners. I was talking about being directly descended from a man who fought 157 years ago today. Right now, he was at the Battle of Shiloh. What a high, incredible patrimony. How could anyone ever be ashamed to be descended from men who fought for something good, for something just, for something righteous? I was born in 1980, so that was exactly 115 years after Lee's surrender at Appomattox, and I tell you, it is a deeply spiritual, something spiritual comes over me when I hear Dixie. My eyes swell with emotion when I read of those gallant sacrifices those men made in their attempts to stave off federal oppression and tyranny. It is perhaps a feeling that only a Southerner can truly know. But again, wherever you are from, you are with us in spirit, if not in blood, if you stand for the things this show stands for. But during this month, this is a special month for Southerners. It's a special month here for TPC.
Well, what they were fighting for, and let's get this out on the table right away.
Well, hold on. I am going to say we're going to spend the bulk of this hour talking about the cause of the war, what they were fighting for and what they were not fighting for. We're going to do that. But first, before we get into that, Keith, I just want to let you hold a little court here. I just want to ask you personally, because Keith's basically going to be giving a presentation, I guess, this hour. So there's not going to be as much back and forth. Keith has something prepared. It's almost like a speech with commercial breaks, because this is commercial radio, of course. But before we get into all of that, Keith, we're going to get into it at the top of the next segment. Tell the audience in your own words what it means to you to be descended from Confederate veterans, to be a son of the South.
Well, it's honesty. It's that they went to war for the reason that all just wars are fought, to defend kith and kin, to defend their country. We weren't, as John Quincy Adams said, America would never do, going abroad to seek monsters to conquer, which is basically what the American military has been thrust into doing. It's not the fault of the people in the military. It's the fault of our leaders. They've basically turned us into the police force for the United Nations or for the rest of the world. These people were defending their hearths and homes. They were doing this, which is that's the only thing that an honest, courageous man can do. If they're going to come, it's like Shelby Foote said. He was confronting, you know, the old bugaboo about the Civil War being about slavery and Southerners wanting to defend slavery. He said that there was a Union officer that asked a Confederate captive, "Why are you fighting people like you that are poor and obviously don't have any slaves? Why are you fighting us?" And the guy said, "Because you're down here." That's it. That's it in a nutshell. When you invade someone's home and try to take over the reins of government and try to oppress the natural-born citizens of that area, if they don't resist you, you're dealing with a group of cowards. Our ancestors are not a group of cowards, James.
And nor can we do anything less, nor can we honor them if we did anything less than our very best. Now, we can't join, Keith, as you folks, as you saw at thepoliticalcesspool.org this week in a post entitled The Confederate Heritage of Keith Alexander, we can't go join the independent scouts of Captain Ed Porter, but we can do our work here on the radio. We can use the gifts that God has given us and the opportunities that God has have given us to carry on the fight in the best way that we can. There aren't troops that we can join with right now. That's not the opportunity that we have right now, but we do what we can with what we've got.
Well, we're not going to allow our ancestors to be slandered.
No, that's the
truth. We're not going to allow them to be a political football, which is what white Southerners have become. We've become the group that the left loves to hate more than any other group, and they need to be defended because this is slander. This is defamation. They were not any way or form like the way they are being portrayed to have been by our leftist media.
Well, if you go to that post that I just mentioned at thepoliticalcesspool.org, you'll see a letter from Judah Benjamin, the one Jewish fellow in the Confederacy. He was the Secretary of War before he became the Treasurer of the CSA. A letter, though, from Judah Benjamin to a member in Keith's family. And then I just mentioned the name Captain Ed Porter. Now, that's a Confederate that most people won't be familiar with. But you have a little, advertisement here, Keith. What was Ed Porter to you, and what's this advertisement about that you've got a picture of at your home?
Well, he was an ancestor, and he was the rector or pastor of the Third Presbyterian Church. They still have First and Second Presbyterian churches in Memphis, but Third Presbyterian Church has gone the way of all flesh. It no longer exists, but the church building exists at the corner of Chelsea and 7th Street. It's called the Old Brick Church. I have a plate up in my attic somewhere that we used to have displayed on a plate rail of it. Now, the building was so soundly built that it's still in existence. It has gone through various transformations through the age. I think it was last a black church, but now it's an empty building, but it's still there. And the memory of Ed Porter is still there, too. He raised troops, just like Forrest did, for the Confederacy. Judah Benjamin his letter basically gives him authority to raise troops.
I think in his letter he says, are you brave and ready to face almost certain death? If so, join my company. It was something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I think Forrest said. If you want an opportunity to kill Yankees, we're going to be there. But anyway, you know, this is unfortunate that a lot of northern people that really didn't have a beef weren't going to benefit from the establishment of the day's subjugation of the South.
It's just like World War II.
It's just like
everybody,
you know,
lost
the
war.
The Irish people that had just come off the boat were immediately, the Irish men were pressed into the service, and that's what caused the draft riots in New York City. They basically said, we're not coming over here to fight this war. I said, you know, we don't have a dog in this fight, and we are tired of being used as cannon fodder. We're used as cannon fodder by the English in their wars, and now we come over here and you want to use as cannon fodder in this war for Lincoln, Mr. Lincoln's war.
A scene of Irish fighting Irish, brother against brother, is depicted in the movie Gods and Generals in one of the battles there. But very quickly, Captain Ed Porter raising troops. A little more about that. You can check it out for yourself at our blog post.
But he was with him throughout the war, and I have a letter where he was corresponding with his wife, getting money to the family somehow to live.
And children
be able to survive.
Still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they have this tendency to try to, you know, tilt things in their direction.
There's no voter fraud.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. And you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text FIGHT to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. Defendapatriot.com.
Are you proud to be a rebel?
Amen. Absolutely.
We were so excited about Confederate History Month, we just completely ignored our commercial cue last segment. We just continued the show for about two more minutes before we realized we weren't even on the air. So that's what Confederate History Month does for us. But let's get to the meat of this hour. Now, in the next hour, Gene Andrews is back. A retired history teacher, former Marine, current caretaker of the Nathan Bedford Forrest Childhood Home. He's going to talk to us more about the brave general and what really happened at Fort Pillow. We have done this before on the air. I'm doing it again tonight, and I'll tell you why when we get to that third hour with our guest of the evening, first guest of Confederate History Month, Gene Andrews. But first, everything you probably have heard about the war is wrong, including its name. It was not a civil war. A civil war indicates that there were two opposing armies trying to capture control of the government or take the capital or keep the capital or sack the capital. This was a war of secession, really like the Revolutionary War. And in fact, many of the Confederates descended from the founding fathers. I know Patrick Henry's grandson was in the Confederate Army. Many more examples like that. Now, what we are going to be talking about this hour is the cause of the war, its effects, ramifications, so on and so forth. Keith used to do a little speaking circuit at different SCV camps, and he had a little presentation. We're going to give the radio version of it right now. Keith, take it away.
Well, let's first of all get to the causes of the Civil War. And I've done enough investigation of this now that I'm sure I feel pretty confident about this conclusion. There was a racial difference between the inhabitants of the North versus the inhabitants of the South. the people of the North were basically the English stock were Anglo-Saxon slash Norman. The Southerners were Scots-Irish and Celtic, Irish, Welsh, Cornwall, Brittany, places like that. This corresponds to an observation I've made about England and its class system and its snobbery, quite frankly. I have an English mother. I've been to visit England in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and I can tell you this about England. In America, if you're from the North, you're a sophisticate and you're a cosmopolitan person, and if you're from the South, you're a dumb hick. Well, they have a corresponding bifurcation in England. The closer you are to London, the more of a sophisticate you are, and the further away from London you are, the more of a hick you are. Well, the Celtic people were driven to the margins, to Cornwall, to Wales, to Ireland, to the Isle of Man, to Scotland, places like this. Those were the Celtic people.
And those were the people who settled the South.
Yeah, and those were the people that came to the South. Most Celtic people were the last group of the so-called founding stock of America, people that were around when the American nation was founded in 1791, 1775 to 1791, basically. They came over in 1740, and they were brought specifically for the purpose of providing a buffer between Indian territory and the more civilized coastal areas of the 13 colonies. Now, the people of New England were particularly a nettlesome and troublesome problem. Most colonies were established by their various mother countries for the purpose of making money. But the Massachusetts Bay Colony, which all of New England sprang from, had an entirely different purpose for England. The Massachusetts Bay Colony was founded not to make money. The soil was too rocky, it wasn't a great farming area, and it was too far north. It was founded to be a dumping ground for religious crackpots, and that's what it got. It's lived up to the expectations of the English, because shortly after America achieved its independence from Great Britain, the 13 colonies achieved their independence from Great Britain, the people of New England started veering into weird and strange religious practices. Rosicrucianism, transcendentalism, Unitarianism, things like this. Unorthodox Christianity. And these people, they were often in error but never in doubt. They are convinced of their own superiority. And this is the type of moral preening that we got. This, when they put their, sank their teeth into the slavery issue, they use that to parade their supposedly superior virtue and holiness against the benighted peoples of the South. And the people of the South were offended, as anybody should be. Slavery was on the way out, and smart people knew that. Another thing you never hear about the run-up to the so-called Civil War, as James said, it was really a war of secession, just like the American 13 colonies were seceding from the British Empire. The South was trying to secede from the emerging American Empire at the time, and the Anti-Federalists were primarily Southerners, and they had serious misgivings about joining into this union with the North. And the whole Civil War could have been avoided if those Anti-Federalists had just prevailed, stuck to their guns, and said, look, you people have your own country up there, we'll have our own country down here. And as far as slavery goes, slavery was on the way out. It was on the way out in the founding documents. They don't tell you that importation of slaves was to end in 1808 according to the terms of the original Constitution. there was not going to be an African slave trade after that time.
Or as Kirk Lyons put it last year during this series, no slave ever came in on a ship bearing the Confederate flag.
That's true enough, and most of them came into New England, and the slave importers were Jewish merchants in New England for the most part. Now, when you start talking about reparations, that will be an interesting concept, won't it, to bring that up, because that's the truth of it. And a lot of these big companies like Aetna Insurance Company had predecessor companies that were instrumental in that slave trade. And many of the slaves came to New England first and then came down into the South. Now, there is a reason why no other nation in the Western Hemisphere, with the possible exception of Haiti, which was just a spontaneous revolution by the black population, both free and slave, against the white French proprietors of the colony, St. Dominique. But other than that, there was never a war or any bloodshed involved in freeing the slaves, and the slaves were all freed in the Western Hemisphere, every nation.
Without a war, except this one.
By 1890. Why was that? We'll get back to that after these words from our sponsors.
Pursuing liberty. Using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
President Trump is thanking Jewish Republicans for their support, and he's urging them to help him again for his campaign in 2020. He spoke before members of the Republican Jewish Coalition.
Shabbat Shalom.
The president told the crowd he's kept his promise to support Israel, and pointing to those on the left who criticized the Jewish state, he said Democrats have allowed anti-Semitism to take root in their party.
They have allowed that. They have allowed that.
He spoke of his stance on immigration after Friday's inspection of a portion of his new wall in Calexico, California. He said the U.S. is simply too full for any more migrants.
Get out. Sorry, get out. Sorry, can't handle it.
For now, the president is backing off his threat to close the southern border with Mexico. This is USA Radio News.
If your credit card bills have gotten out of hand, call Consolidated Credit now. If you're making the minimum payments, but your balance is just not going down, call Consolidated Credit now. If the interest rates on your credit cards are so high, it will take years to get out of debt, call Consolidated Credit now. They've helped over 5 million people with credit card debt. They can consolidate your debts into one lower payment, reduce your interest rates, and get you out of debt fast. If you're struggling with credit card debt, the first step is yours. Call Consolidated Credit now. Call 800-406-0046. 800-406-0046. That's 800-406-0046. Consolidated Credit Counseling Services Incorporated, 5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33313. Not a loan company. Licensed by the New York Department of Financial Services or by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM-19, Oregon DM-80031. Licensed by the Virginia State Corporation Commission. License number DC-32.
Boeing is cutting production as it works to get its faulty planes back in the air. KIRO reporter Heather Bosch.
Boeing is cutting production of its 737 MAX from 52 airplanes down to 42 per month starting mid-April. The company says it now knows the deadly Lion Air and Ethiopian airline crashes were caused by a, quote, chain of events, but both had something to do with its anti-stall MCAS system. Analyst Richard Abulafia says this is going to take more than a simple software fix.
You know, right now, just don't think they have enough information, and there's too many pieces in the equation for them to keep going at that pace.
Boeing says employment should not be affected. Heather Bosch, Seattle.
A New York City man who was charged with murder after a friendly fire death involving a policeman says the shooting stemmed from a prank that went wrong. Christopher Ranson says they were staging a fake holdup with a fake gun at a T-Mobile store when the shooting happened. You're listening to USA Radio News.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Tremendous privilege. You want to talk about privilege, I'll give you one, to be able to sit here 157 years after my great-grandfather was fighting at Shiloh and defend his honor on the AM public airwaves. And that's what we're doing. That's what we do every month in April on this program. You've got four installments. And, you know, when you're talking about the cause of the war between the states, the Second American Revolution, there have been thousands of books on this subject, two or three of them probably accurate. We do the best we can with what little time afforded to us on commercial talk radio, but we hope we do enough to make you think and to dig in a little further on this subject. Now, when we get into the month of May, it's back to business as usual. This is a contemporary political talk show, but it is a talk show that is at once pro-white, pro-Christian, and pro-Southern, and we like to accentuate each of those elements fairly often. Now, Keith is continuing now with his presentation on the causes of the war. He's also going to tell you why the Confederates were compelled to rebel, and why they were just in doing so, Keith.
Okay, getting back to what we were saying in the first segment of this, this is basically a war between the Celtic South and the non-Celtic North. Who were the constituent parts of the North? You had German Catholics that came over after the War of 1848. Many of them were communists. Others were just Catholics. They tended to settle in the Midwest. They, unlike most immigrants, came over with a pretty good satchel of money, and they were buying large segments of the good farmland in the Middle West, and this alarmed.
Wait a minute, you're telling me, Keith, I got to interrupt you. You're telling me it's actually deeper than what we've been taught, that the Southerners were just evil racists who wanted to keep slaves, and the North were just the good guys who wanted to abolish. You're saying it's actually deeper than that?
Yes. You know, the Celts or the Celtic people and the Anglo-Saxon Norman establishment around the home counties, as they're called, around London, have been at each other's throats long before the war between the states, and they've continued to be at each other's throats since then. Recently, you had a referendum for independence for Scotland. Everybody knows about the IRA and the battles that were fought for the freedom of Ireland from England. But, see, this Celtic, that abrasion pre-existed the Civil War, and it was carried over here into America. And furthermore, you had other groups like the German Catholics I was telling you about that basically, you had people like Henry Ward Beecher that were very upset at this. They thought there was some type of Catholic conspiracy going on to take over America. And he first sent his Beecher Bibles, not just to the anti-slavery forces in Kansas. He sent it to people in the Midwest. And he also founded Union Theological Seminary in Cincinnati, Ohio, to be a bulwark against this creeping Catholicism, okay? So you had a lot of different players in the run-up to the Civil War. The South didn't start the war. The South seceded from the Union. First, the coastal states, seven of them, and then when Lincoln wanted to raise 75,000 troops from the various states, including the border states and the northern tier of southern states, certain states, Arkansas, Tennessee, Virginia, and North Carolina at that point decided they weren't going to take up arms against their kith and kin. They were going to fight with them, so they seceded at that point for 11 Confederate states altogether. Now, the South wanted a divorce from the North. They weren't trying to take over the U.S. government. They weren't trying to reverse a presidential election like the Democrats are doing now regarding Donald Trump. They just wanted out of this bad marriage they were in with the North. But like most people that wanted a divorce, they would have preferred to have had an uncontested divorce. And you had a phony war period here, just like you had in World War II, between Lincoln's election and the secession. Now, slavery was not the reason they seceded. And the answer to that, the definitive answer, is the Corwin Amendment, C-O-R-W-I-N. This was an amendment, a proposed amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Had it been ratified by the states, it would have been the 13th Amendment. Rather than the amendment that abolished slavery, it would be the amendment that perpetuated slavery forever. That's what the Corwin Amendment proposed to do, that slavery would remain forever legal and inviolate in all states and territories in which it was then legal in the United States. So if slavery was the overwhelming reason why the South seceded, that would have satisfied them, but it didn't satisfy them. What was the real impetus for secession? It was that the South was being treated like a colony. Again, James had said that the best parallel analogy, if you want to look historically at, to explain the American Civil War, is the American Revolution. The American colonies, the 13 colonies, got tired of being a colony that did not have a right of self-determination, but was being operated solely for the exclusive benefit of people from out of the region. In this case, England. The South was being used similarly. The South was the breadbasket. It was the agricultural part of the United States of America at that time. It didn't have a lot of railroads. It didn't have a great infrastructure, but it was where all of the foodstuffs and other agricultural products like cotton and tobacco were grown and for use by the rest of the nation and for export. Now, before the Civil War, there was no income tax. In fact, that's why they had to pass the 16th Amendment, because the original Constitution of the United States prohibited specifically there being an income tax. Without the income tax, which is the primary source of getting the money that funds the federal government today, how did they fund the federal government in the antebellum period? Well, they did it through excise taxes. I'm sure you've all heard of the Whiskey Rebellion when you were taking American history, at least I did when I was. That was in the 1790s, where the federal government imposed an excise tax on the production of whiskey. Whiskey was the way that a hill farmer made money off of his corn crop. He couldn't grow county fair winning ears of corn in that thin rocky soil of like western Pennsylvania or in the Appalachians or whatnot, but he, you know, he could basically grow feedlot corn. But feedlot corn worked just as well as county fair winning ears of corn when you baked it, ground it up, turned it into mash, and then into whiskey. So this has really hit the most hard-pressed farmers in America at the time, and that's why they rebelled against a federal tax. This is where all the stuff between the revenuers and the moonshiners started. You know, Thunder Road, like that movie in the 50s with Robert Mitchum, for example. They were still having ill feelings about that excise tax even then. And the other excise taxes were on cotton production. I mean, were on, let's say, foreign manufactured goods coming in here, particularly iron and metal products, furniture, other things. Well, the South wanted to get those things at a cheaper price. They didn't want to have to pay this tariff. The tariff originally started around 15%. Then you had the Tariff of Abominations episode from 1828 to 1832, in which they tried to raise it up in the upper 20s. This is when Andrew Jackson said that that's where the nullification doctrine came from. John C. Calhoun said, a state has a right to ignore federal law that hurts its people disproportionately. So that's what South Carolina did. They just didn't collect this custom duty on foreign imported goods from Europe. But it wasn't just to get cheap goods. The South had as one of its primary markets Europe, England, France, Germany. They had to sell their products to them because back then a foreign nation would not tolerate a trade imbalance. So they had to incur these tariffs where the northern people didn't. We'll talk about this more after these words from our sponsors.
Let's hang on and come back to the political cesspool right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Yeah, this is David in engineering.
This is your wife in suburbia.
Oh, hi, hon. What's up?
How's the robot coming?
Well, he doesn't exactly respond to requests yet, but I'm...
Well, I know how frustrating that can be.
You do?
Uh-huh. I'm still waiting for my romantic lunch date.
Oh, yeah.
David.
Well, I must not have enough memory allocated.
Uh-huh.
Sorry.
You know, your son said mama today.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Well, we'll have to have that sound chip changed to Dada.
Well, you could reprogram it yourself, you know.
I know. Hey, why don't we do it over lunch today?
Oh, you really are brilliant.
Thanks. You want me to bring the robot?
David.
He can order pasta in 11 languages.
Only if he pays for his own lunch.
Okay. Oh, don't forget to bring Chip.
I still wish we hadn't named him that.
Well, why? It beats general default.
Oh.
Family. Isn't it about time?
Do you know that a baby processes information 3 times faster than an adult?
An adult what?
Engineer. Funny.
I'll see you at noon.
I can't wait.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
As you all know, Roe versus Wade has resulted in some of the most permissive abortion laws anywhere in the world. For example, in the United States, it's one of only 7 countries to allow elective late-term abortions, along with China, North Korea, and others. Right now, in a number of states, the laws allow a baby to be born from his or her mother's womb in the 9th month. It is wrong. It has to change. Americans are more and more pro-life. You see that all the time. In fact, only 12% of Americans support abortion on demand at any time. Under my administration, we will always defend the very first right in the Declaration of Independence, and that is the right to life.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Dixie, played by the Edison Symphony Orchestra. Thank you.
You know, folks, we talk about it. These men who fought for the South, we said it already. They were better men than you or I will ever know. They're better men than I am. And they're so much better men than what is presented as society as fashionable and trendy and hip men. I don't want to sully our Confederate History Month coverage by bringing up a modern headline, but I browse some headlines during the commercial breaks, and I see here Don Lemon, that's Don Lemon of CNN, engaged to Tim Malone. Don Lemon is tying the knot, and it's supposed to be this good thing, and it's him and this other guy, and they're pretending to get married. And you know, it just makes me all the more proud that we're rooted in something true and something good and not this...
something truly biblical.
We have abjured the realm, and makes me all the more proud of my Southern and my Christian roots. Well, how can you cover the cause, what led to one of history's most tragic and a war that changed things as much as any, I guess you could say, in many ways, especially on this continent, obviously, but... you'd be hard-pressed to find another one that had equally significant ramifications, I guess. And you can't put it in an hour of commercial talk radio. There's just no way you could do it. We are going to give you a sketch, and Keith is now continuing on with his treatment of the causes of the war and why the South was right in fighting it, Keith. And well, you've talked about it a lot, but I haven't heard the word slavery once yet.
Okay, well, how did slavery get to be prominent in the discussion about the causes of the war between the states? It certainly wasn't prominent in Abraham Lincoln's utterances on the coming conflict before the Civil War. In fact, he was anti-black. Let's just come right out and say it.
Hey, look, we talked about this at dinner tonight before the show. By today's parlance, Abraham Lincoln was a hardcore white supremacist.
Well, he didn't want slavery to extend into the territories that would become states, not because he had a devotion to the rights of black people, but because he saw black people as something negative, and he didn't want them to be in those areas competing with white farmers and yeomen for work back then. See, that's all there was to it.
Keith's celebrity precedes him. He continues to get phone calls here.
Yeah, but anyway, let me just say this. Slavery came about as I believe, a public relations move on the part of the Lincoln administration.
Sure it was, because the war by 1862-1863, you know, Lincoln was very much in peril of not being reelected, and the support for the war in the North was on life support.
Well, it's even more fundamental than that, James. Just like the American Revolution, for the revolutionaries, for the rebellious group to be able to effectively secede, they needed to ally themselves with a European power. If the 13 colonies had not been able to persuade through Benjamin Franklin the French to join the battle on their side, and particularly to get the benefits of a French navy, because the American navy was basically non-existent, they turned a couple of old freighters into battleships by putting cannons on them, but that was no match for the English. For example, at Yorktown, if Cornwallis had been able to get the English fleet in and evacuate his army, the American Revolution would not have ended at Yorktown. So the South, just like the predecessor United States of America, the 13 colonies in the American Revolution, needed a foreign power to join them. Now, the foreign power that was top of the list was England. England was the primary purchaser of Southern cotton and tobacco and other agricultural products, and they were the ones most likely to join the war on behalf of the South. But there's another feature about England that made them unique. They were the first nation in Europe to abolish slavery in 1833. And even though that happened in the 1830s, by the 1850s, there was still a large minority of people in England that were abolitionists and opposed to slavery. So, in order to keep them out, it behooved Lincoln to portray the Civil War as a fight against slavery, with the him and the righteous North trying to abolish slavery against the evil, recalcitrant Southerners. And this is the way he sold the war to the English. Now, smart Englishmen like Charles Dickens, were not fooled by all of this. They were able to talk with Southerners and realize that this was basically a red herring that had been thrown out by the Lincoln administration to misrepresent the war in a way that would prevent England from getting involved in it on the side of the South. That's why that was done. And slavery, ever since then, has become the great explanation, because the left wants history to serve its purposes, and their purpose is radical egalitarianism. And the slavery narrative about the Civil War fits neatly into their preconceived notions about what lessons we should be drawing from history. You don't want to draw the lesson that you basically had a president in the United States that was the first American imperialist. He wanted America to be a big, important player in world politics. And he didn't want it split in half with half the people and half the wealth that it would otherwise have. That's why he opposed the South pulling out of the Union. The South, as I said, should never have gotten into the Union in the first place if we'd listened to some of our wiser people in the South, like Patrick Henry, who were very strident anti-federalists and didn't want us to join, to sign off on the Constitution and become part of the United States of America. If that had never happened, there would never have been a Civil War. But, as I said before, slavery was on the way out anyway. Slavery was ended, I think, in the Western Hemisphere in the 1880s when Brazil abolished it. Why did all these countries abolish it? They abolished it because of the increased mechanization of agricultural work. This is the time between the Civil War and 1888, I think it is, when Brazil abolished slavery, of the McCormick Reaper and the first combines and stuff like this. There wasn't a need for slave labor, either in America or in Brazil or in any of these other countries. So they were more than willing to pat themselves on the back and say, we're so morally righteous, we ended slavery, but they did it for economic reasons primarily.
Keith, I got to just say, you were running for office last year at this time, so we were deprived of your contributions to Confederate History Month, as you have so duly given over the years. It has just been a treat to listen to this for this hour, to be able to be part of a show that would present this in the AM radio airwaves. You will not hear this anywhere else, folks. That's why you support us. But it's great to have you back for Confederate History Month this year, Keith. This is what we were missing last year. Last year's series was a great series. We had some great guests. But we missed this deep dive, this in-depth, encyclopedic, historical recounting of what really was going on at that time. Now, we will continue this over the course of the month with Keith. We've got great guests like Gene Andrews, who's coming up in the very next hour. We're going to talk about Nathan Bedford Forrest and Fort Pillow, what really happened there. 2 minutes left, though, this hour. Keith, wrap it up.
Well, keep in mind the two things I've added here. One, the increasing mechanization of farm work made slavery unnecessary and redundant. And consequently, all of the nations in the Western Hemisphere wound up abolishing slavery, and they did it not because of moral reservations about slavery so much as practical economic reasons. And the other thing is, remember the Celts versus the non-Celts. Southerners were Celtic people. Celtic people have been at odds with the establishment in England for centuries, before the Civil War, and they're still at odds with them now. A lot of people don't know this, but Robert E. Lee, his ancestry was primarily Welsh. So he was from this marginal area too. This is a key to understanding what was really going on, as opposed to what you're, if you go to the movies and watch that great Disney production, Django Unchained or something like this, and get that vision of what the antebellum South was. There was really legitimate arguments made about the plight of northern industrial workers who were white and black slaves in the South. Black slaves were property. They had to be provided for from infancy until death, not just during their productive years. On the other hand, northern industrial workers, they could be cast aside if they got injured or anything else without any loss of capital to the owners of the factory.
We're going to have to push pause right there, but Keith will be back with us again next week to continue this conversation. But coming up in the next hour, Gene Andrews on Nathan Bedford Forrest. Stay tuned.
Can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.